Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to In for Life, the podcast. This is episode 361, called The Surrogacy Panel.
This episode is brought to you by Fertile. Hey friends, it's Allie. If you're in the middle of your what else can we try family building era, listen up. Fertile is the first and only sterile, FDA-cleared, at-home insemination kit designed for intracervical insemination, so sperm is placed right at the cervical opening. It's engineered to mimic the precision of an IUI, just 1 inch lower, but without washed sperm, meds, or appointments. Fertile is also triple patented, made in the US with IVF grade materials, and clinically validated. The kit comes with 3 sterile attempts, so you can cover your 3 most fertile days each cycle. It's as easy to use as a tampon, it ships discreetly, and it's HSA, FSA eligible. So who is Fertile for? Folks with unexplained infertility, LGBTQIA plus families, solo parents by choice, or anyone delaying IUI or IVF because of cost or burnout. If you want an option that's private, empowering, and science-backed, this is your sign. Okay, so here's what to do. Go to Fertile.com today and use code INFERTILEAF for $10 off. That's Fertile, pronounced Fertile, but spelled with a PhD out of spite. They told Dr. Jen she wouldn't be a mother, and she used her PhD to prove them wrong. Again, that's PHERDAL.com and use code INFERTILEAF. Thanks, Fertile. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, BELIBABY, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly.
All right, everybody, in case you missed Fertility Rally Live number 10, which happened in November, this is a surrogacy panel that we ran during that event, and it was so incredible. I just want you guys to hear all of it. So without further ado, this is the surrogacy panel on In for Life. Hey, everybody. Welcome to our surrogacy and IP panel. We're so excited. We have the best group of people here today. Jess Kulski is going to moderate. We've got Sarah Strimmel-Bentley. We have Emily Westerfield and we have Alexandra French. They're all going to kind of give you a little of their background, so I'll let them do it in their own words. But thank you so much for watching. We're going to answer so many questions and cover a lot. So here we go. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, thank you guys for having me. I'm super excited to have this conversation and I'd love to kick it off. Just going kind of in order, I'm going to just call on everybody so you can get to know us a little bit. We want this to feel like a casual, cozy conversation. So Sarah, if I can put you on the spot and have you lead us off and share a little bit about yourself and what led you down the path of surrogacy.
Yes, thank you, Jesse. Hi, everyone. Sarah Strimmel-Bentley. I am a former Broadway showgirl. I did 7 Broadway shows over a 15-year career. I left Broadway and started 2 successful yoga brands. Fell in love, finally, in New York City in 2020 and promptly was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so I had had everything was amazing. And then during the pandemic, I found a lump. And my whole world changed. So I had a double mastectomy, 8 rounds of chemo, 28 rounds of radiation, and I was able to make 1 embryo to preserve my fertility with my then boyfriend, now husband. And lo and behold, my oncologist, due to my age, my type of cancer, and my treatment journey, said I would need to use a surrogate to bring our one little embryo here. And so that began my journey into surrogacy.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that with us. Alex, would you care to tell us about your journey and what led you down the path of surrogacy?
So my story is actually kind of similar to Sarah's. So I am based in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a realtor here. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at the age of 31. I was very fortunate at the time to have a son who was almost 2 years old. Like Sarah, I found my own lump. Went to the doctor thinking it was probably nothing. It ended up being stage 3 breast cancer. No family history, anything like that. My doctor really had the foresight of making me go ahead, making, you know, my eggs and my embryos and all that stuff. My initial plan was to have 6 rounds of chemo, double mastectomy, taking a hormone block for 18 months, and then getting off, trying to have a child, and then getting back on it for another 5 years. But when I went for my double mastectomy, they found a second type of cancer. And my doctor said, no ways, no how, you cannot carry a child. Your cancer will absolutely return. So thankful for my oncologist for making me create my embryos. We were able to pursue surrogacy so we could complete our family after that.
Amazing. And later on, you'll share how you're still giving back so much in the surrogacy space. Emily, I'm so glad that you're here. I would love to hear from you about a little bit about you and what led you down the path of becoming a gestational carrier. And just for people listening, I'm going to use surrogate, GC. GC stands for gestational carrier, sort of interchangeably throughout the conversation.
Yes, of course. So I am on the other end of things. I'm a surrogate myself, and I'm a gestational carrier. And you two are perfect reasons as to why, like, I help people who are not able to carry their own or, you know, have diagnoses like that, that need the help of someone to start their family. So I started over a decade ago, which sounds crazy to say, but I had a cousin who struggled with infertility, and she was able to naturally conceive the first time and had a son, but then struggled with secondary infertility for years and years. And she was able to get pregnant, but she just kept having miscarriage after miscarriage and never really got any answers. And I feel like, God love her, she would be so excited and she'd share her pregnancy news. And then she would feel like she would have to untell us when she would have that loss. And so it was heartbreaking as I sit here and, you know, I've got little feet pattering around the house and I'm able to have easy pregnancies, and it's just, it's not fair. So I really dug in deep to trying to understand what I could do for her at the time, not even thinking that surrogacy was an option, because I myself have had miscarriages personally. My very first and my third pregnancy ended in a miscarriage, and I never thought that I would qualified to even help somebody else. But lo and behold, after lots of research, begging my husband, educating myself, I was able to, you know, start my path of becoming a gestational carrier and helping others. I did not help my cousin, but I did get started with helping other women through a community that I found, and it led me to where I am today.
Thank you so much. As a former intended parent myself, I can say that what you do, there is just no words that can beautifully and articulate like just how amazing it is and what a gift you give to people.
Thank you. Oh, I love you all.
We could cry. You never know which way this could go. There's likely it'll be me, but I'll try to hold it together. I want to just share really quickly about me. I have been on Rally before, but if you haven't listened to many of my recordings, I am Jessie Jaskolski. I am an intended parent twice through surrogacy. I have 2 daughters now who are 3 and 5 years old. And I came to surrogacy following a 22-week pregnancy loss of my son that really just wreaked havoc on my body and left me with secondary infertility. And just after years of feeling like anything that could go wrong surely went wrong for me. After I had my daughters, I decided to enter the surrogacy world professionally, and now I help intended parents and surrogates through their surrogacy journeys. Well, let's get into it. I would love to open it up and just ask what advice everybody has, so both perspectives, intended parent and surrogate, on how to foster a healthy relationship with one another.
I'll get started, I guess. I mean, I'll start with, like, there's no two journeys that are ever alike. So much of it is just figuring out, like, how each other wants to be communicated with and the level of communication that each party wants to have. You know, does one person want to be communicated by text message or Zoom calls or more like get together in person? Because it really is such a personal journey. And there's something so like intimate that happens between a surrogate and intended parents that when you're going throughout the process. So just figure out what each person wants and the frequency of it.
Absolutely.
And I'll piggyback on that, Alex. Because, you know, it's like dating. I was saying dating earlier. It's like my husband and I were in a throuple and we're dating. Our surrogate's name is Whitney. She is our angel. She is incredible. We spoke with her last night. So we're still dating her. you want to like, does she want you to text her every day? And so once you sort of learn the way in which the both of you communicate and your style and you know, the frequency. But I think for me, the most important thing that I tell all of the women, I'm a huge advocate in the breast cancer and surrogacy space, and I have a nonprofit that pays for surrogacy after breast cancer. So I'm very much in this every day. And I spoke to a woman yesterday, and my advice is let go of control. You know, you want her to eat exactly how you would eat and use the pans that you would want to use to cook with. But you know what? At the end of the day, I could send Whitney every single thing and she's still going to put ranch on her pizza, you know, and that's just, it's you have to let go of that control and know that the woman that you gave this incredible, you know, journey to is going to take care of your baby the exact same way that you would have taken care of yours. And that's with love and respect and health and all of it. So that's my greatest, I think, piece of advice is, just let go of the control. I know it's hard, but try.
And I think like I'll double piggyback. Like that is the number one like best advice to give. And while I do this both personally and professionally, setting expectations on the relationship you would like to have, not only throughout the pregnancy and talking about those communication factors and being involved in appointments, the embryo transfer day, delivery, setting those expectations on those, but also like after the baby is born, how, if everything forms organically, how you would like that relationship to continue, but also their involvement and just setting boundaries. I think it's so important. And while it sounds like the simplest little thing, these journeys are combining two total strangers and they get real intimate, real fast, real personal. So yeah, I think communication is probably the best advice and just being transparent and honest. And if it's not a fit, it's not a fit. That's okay.
Emily, can I ask you, what is a boundary that you set in your surrogacy journeys?
I really love what Sarah said about letting go of control. It like means the world to hear that, but it's so hard. I feel like it's so hard for, you know, mothers who, whether they've been able to experience carrying a child before or not, really just understanding what am I doing every day? Who am I with? You know, where am I hanging out? The friends, the people, the places, all the things. So I feel like one of those boundaries that I set is just, you know, have trust in me and understanding that I am doing the absolute best that I can to take care of your child during the time that I have him or her as I would my own. I wouldn't put myself in any type of dangerous situation. I'm not playing full contact sports. You know, I'm not hanging out in bars, but, you know, just understanding that I am here to do this for you. And while I still have a chaotic life and still busy, I just appreciate you respecting that, you know, I have a life and I have a job and I have a husband and kids and all the things that I'm still trying to live at the same time of while I'm carrying your child.
Yeah. And Sarah, I followed you on social and really followed along on your surrogacy journey. And I feel like your relationship with Whitney was so beautiful. And was there any boundaries or expectations that you shared in the beginning of the journey to sort of set you up for, you know, what looked like such a successful throuple? I'm going to steal that. I love it.
You know what? I didn't know, you know, I'd never been able to carry a pregnancy. I didn't have any children when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so like, I just was living my way into the answers with Whitney. And so was she. She was a first time surrogate. She has two beautiful children of her own. So it was just this beautiful symbiosis of, you know, we kind of just like learned what each other needed. And I was there to give her anything she needed. If she called me, what happened was I became her advocate. We lived our way into that. Like, she had an issue with her fertility clinic. She called me Queen Bee because Beyonce is my favorite artist and my last name is Bentley. So she's like, Queen Bee's on the phone. And I would get on the phone and I was like, you gotta do this. Like, I was her biggest advocate. Right. Because I was advocating not just obviously for my child, but for Whitney, like, you know, so we lived our way into that. And then we did, you know, we would have boundaries at a certain point, but then also not. Like, I would go and give her progesterone shots while she was in town, because this is hilarious, you guys. Her friend was giving her, for those of you listening, if you know, when our surrogate or gestational carrier is, you know, in her journey, you have to do progesterone shots and they teach you how to do them. But I guess Whitney's fertility clinic didn't. So her friend was doing them in her arm and they're supposed to be done like in your buttocks. So, like, you know, I would go and give her shots and things. So we were very, like I said, very open with each other. But towards the end of her pregnancy, Whitney liked to take road trips with her kids and not like small ones, but big ones, like overnight. So then I was like, here's a boundary, Whitney. We're not going to take any more road trips when you're in, you know, when you're a month out of delivery. So you just, yeah, I mean, you kind of learn with each other. And that's why I think our relationship was so beautiful, is we gave each other space to like screw up and cry and do all the stuff. But at the end of the day, like, we were there, you know, we were a team.
It's really beautiful. My next, it's similar, but a little bit different, is like, what did anything surprise you about the relationship dynamic? And Alex, I'd love for you to kick us off with that.
So the dynamic changes throughout the course of the journey, or at least it did for us. You know, like Sarah said, you know, you're entering into like this relationship and you don't know how it's going to end up. And what started out as very like, was like transactional in a certain way. We were very much like, okay, we're having our Zoom calls, we're talking college football, we're talking about Netflix and what movies we're watching. We turned into a family. And the relationship that like my son and my daughter have with our surrogate and her children is just something so special. My children call her, our surrogate's children, their cousins.
Wow.
And anytime like our, you know, our surrogate baby sees, you know, the surrogate and her husband, she like runs to them. She has like this special connection with them. And that was something that just completely surprised us, that love that's there and the excitement that the kids have whenever they get together. All the kids are now roughly about the same age. So I have an 8-year-old son, my third baby, you know, she's 4 years old, and then her kids are 8 and 5. So they're very close in age and they all really enjoy like hanging out together.
So it sounds like, or maybe not, is your surrogate local to you?
So she's in Alabama, I'm in Georgia. So we're about like a 2-hour drive.
Okay.
We'll try like meet up like in the middle and things like that.
I was going to get to this later, but it feels like the perfect time to kind of talk about distance. Like, was that something that was that part of your search criteria, or is that sort of luck? And I would love to like hear from everybody actually about like if that was something that was a priority to them.
So I'm a big person. I believe in like what you put out there kind of is what happens.
Yeah.
And they kept saying from the beginning, so we end up having to enter into our journey in the middle of COVID. It was like in the thick of this. And I kept saying, you know, it doesn't have to be someone local in Georgia, because someone in Birmingham is going to be a lot closer than someone in Valdosta. Our daughter was born in Birmingham. So I just kept using Birmingham as my example over and over again. And that's where it ended up being.
Amazing. Emily, what about you? Did you have a preference of where your intended parents lived?
My very first journey, yes. Like, and that's actually one of the reasons that I ended up working with them or chose them to move forward with, is because they were in the same state. If you ask me that question today, my answer is not the same. I've had babies for couples in Ohio, which is where I live, Michigan, North Carolina, Toronto, and Canada. Like, you know, there's been, and I tell surrogates now and parents too, the same thing. Technology is a beautiful thing. It is a beautiful thing. Being able to FaceTime during appointments, do video calls, screen share, all of the things that we're able to do now is incredible. And even when I did carry for parents in the same state, they didn't come to every appointment. I was there for maybe 20 minutes and then I was out. So I really just feel like while, you know, location is an important factor for intended parents or surrogates who really want that close in-person relationship. In the end, I tell them that it's if it's something that you can broaden your horizons in, or, you know, maybe still be able to be a part of things through technology, then, you know, try to expand that criteria for matching, because it will help. But ultimately, that's why I picked my first journey. But, you know, now today, they could be in China and I'd still want to help. So it doesn't matter to me now.
And what about you, Sarah?
So I didn't care where, because I had mentioned earlier, we had one embryo and, you know, they grade your embryos. So they told me I had a fair quality embryo. And my doctor had very strict a set of a kind of things that whoever our match was had to, just from a physical perspective, yep, match with, right? So we were looking for, as our agency said, we work with CSED out of Boston. They were incredible. They were like, we're looking for a unicorn, right? So I was like, I will fly to Egypt. I will go anywhere, like wherever she is, you know, because it... And I, like you, Alexandra, I was sort of in the COVID time. I wasn't in the thick. I was more towards the end of COVID. And match times were very long. They were running like 12 to 16 months. So with all of that, I at that point, I was like, I just want to see if this miracle happens. So I will, you know, I will go anywhere, anytime. And Whitney is in Richmond, Virginia. And I'm in New York City, for those of you that are listening and watching. So, you know, it's a flight, but not a long flight. And it ended up, but it was Whitney, not where she lived, right? So and we made it work. And we talked last night and I was like, girl, because we try to see each other twice a year. So we're going to fly to Richmond next month for my son's birthday. But yeah, so it's good thing she's not too far, because I love her and I like to see her a lot.
My youngest was also born in Richmond, Virginia.
At VCU?
I am like, as I'm asking, I'm like, I have to remember the hospital, and I'm like drawing a blank, but it's going to come to me by the end of this call.
Oh my God, that's amazing. They were fantastic. I have a lot to say about the birth experience too.
Yeah. I want to say, I asked just one more question about this. And I always say to intended parents that you can sort of set any criteria, and then we are casting either a really wide net or a small net. It's what's most important, and taking into account that could impact your match time. And I would love to know from everybody if there was like one or two things outside of your clinic's requirements, of course, that were really important match points for you. Alex, do you want to start us off?
So my biggest criteria when it came to a match point, other than like all like the medical things and typical, you know, pregnancy, for dietary restrictions, it was no pork, no shellfish for our surrogate. And our surrogate was like, sure, absolutely no problem. Like, I can do that. And then as we got like into the pregnancy, hers was like, it's like, you can't eat that. She's like, but that's like, she's like, he's like, yeah, but that's pork. And she's like, oh, you're right. And like, she didn't realize like how many different things were pork. She's like, it was just like different names. And it was fine. It was great. And her husband was like very like on top of it. It was always like reminding her throughout it. But that was really our biggest like match point.
And it's great she had that support to sort of give her those like friendly nudges throughout the pregnancy. Emily, what about you? Was there anything like one or two points that were really important other than, of course, the clinic's criteria?
So I'm on the other end, right? So right. I'm having to meet the criteria. And every clinic across the United States, Canada, wherever, has very specific criteria in who they will accept into their programs. Some are very strict, some are more flexible. So of course I have to meet all of clinic criteria, but then above and beyond that, like I talk to parents about like location and a single or double embryo transfer and what happens if the embryo splits and carrying multiples. Insurance plays a factor. We talk about like COVID vaccination status, diet, exercise, travel, social media. Like we go through all of the things, breast milk, you know, understanding all of those criteria to say like, is this the best fit for us? And what are we expecting when it comes to our relationship and things like that? So I don't think there's a very specific thing, as I'm like really flexible on all of those things. I feel like it's their journey and I'm here just to, you know, provide that help, but I wouldn't outside of everything that I have to meet for the medical clinic, I feel like there's nothing that really, unless they tell me don't eat specific things. Sorry, Alex. I'm like, oh gosh, I'm sure like if you told me no, I'd be like, that's all I want now. All I crave is pork. But yeah, I don't know if somebody like restricted my diet, that would be hard for me, or telling me like I can't have my cup of coffee a day. Those things may be a deal breaker, but I haven't yet had that scenario where somebody said you can't do something because of, you know, you're carrying the pregnancy. Just follow, of course, your doctor's orders and live healthily as you would. They put that trust in me to, you know, do as I would with my own children, which I appreciate so much.
Absolutely. And Sarah, what about you? I know you had your unicorn, but was there any like, and there's all the clinics are so different with how strict their requirements are, but was there anything else that was really important to you when you were looking for Whitney?
Yes. And actually we matched with a beautiful woman in Boston who was 21 years old before Whitney. And she had a set of circumstances where she had to back out of the journey with many blessings from me. So, you know, I had been through kind of, you know, I did eventually found Whitney and, you know, the story ends well, but you know, I'm going to bring in the more like Shanti woo woo hoo hoo part of this and in qualifications of someone. Cause like my biggest thing was when I met her, I wanted her to be a joyful human. I wanted her, like, Whitney's laugh is unlike anything I've ever heard. And my son, now, see, I'm going to be the first one to cry. My son is the happiest, most, like, magical kid. And I think it's from my genes, but I also think it's because he was with Whitney for over nine months, where, I mean, she laughs and she is grounded and she is strong. And, like, I think the energy of the human being that was going to give my son their energy, that was for me, that was the biggest thing, right? Like, again, put ranch on your pizza, eat whatever you want. But if you are a happy human and you see life the way I see life, which is incredible, then, you know, that's a done deal.
I love that. And that, and I'm moderating, so I'm not supposed to be giving my 2 cents, but I'm going to give my 2 cents very quickly. I had two different surrogates, and my last one was very much like how you're describing Whitney, and also the Richmond. So it's funny. And my youngest
was it Whitney best, Jesse?
No, I'm kidding. No, her name was not Whitney. It was Sarah. And my youngest, she is just like joy personified. So like I'm like, sometimes my husband and I will discuss that. Like, we think a little bit of that is like how joyful Sarah was. So love that. I also want to ask you guys if you had any like legal concerns or like not, I don't want to say legal advice because we're going to let that be for the attorneys, but like any must-haves that you wanted in your contract, like just a lot of people feel very overwhelmed about that process. So I would love to just also give non-legal, but talk about legal and any advice you have for intended parents. Emily, do you want to start us off?
Sure. There's a reason that legal takes so long to complete, right? Like, it's a massive document. So legal contracts, initially, like the first stage of doing the direct agreement between the parents and the carrier, usually is anywhere between 4 to 6 weeks. And it's anywhere from 40 to 70 pages. I've seen bigger ones too. And it's just, rightfully so, it's going to cover everything that should, would, or could happen in a surrogacy journey. And making sure that, you know, every person has their own legal representation to protect them and to make sure that they understand everything and they have that confidence and comfort in that entire document. But again, I go back to transparency. I go back to talking about all of the things. And every page in that document has something that will be reflected in your journey, especially too, like we talk about COVID, you know, quite a few times, and understanding like if she were to get a diagnosis of COVID and what's in place for that, who just basic information of who the medical professionals are and who's representing who, contact information. All the financials are in there. Termination, which is never an easy subject to talk about, especially when, you know, Sarah, you have one embryo, you know, like looking at situations like that where it's got to be covered and you really have to go into, you know, enough detail that everyone is protected in these journeys. Legally, again, I'm really flexible when it comes to matching. So I want to make sure, of course, that all of our...
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The new year doesn't require a new you, maybe just a less burdened you. So many of us carry fear, pressure, doubt, or the constant need to be perfect. And therapy can help you better identify what's weighing you down or holding you back. Having an unbiased perspective can make it so much easier to understand your relationships, motivations, and emotions, and decide what you're ready to let go of. And this is where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp offers access to quality therapists who are fully licensed in the U.S. and work according to a strict code of conduct. They also do the matching work for you. You fill out a short questionnaire, and based on your needs and preferences, plus more than 12 years of experience, BetterHelp typically gets the match right the first time. And if you ever want to switch therapists, you can do that really easily. With over 30,000 therapists and more than 5 million people served globally, BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for live sessions based on over 1.7 million client reviews. You guys know I'm a huge fan of therapy, and I'm always advocating for people to get help if they need it, which is why I would love for you to check out BetterHelp. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. So if you want to take action now, go to betterhelp.com, sign up, and get 10% off. Again, that's BetterHelp.com. Go to betterhelp.com, sign up, and get 10% off. Happy New Year to all of you, and thank you so much to BetterHelp. Again, that's BetterHelp.com.
Expectations that we discussed are reflected in the document and making sure that I do fully understand it. But, you know, everything when it comes to financials that are being exchanged and when it comes to where delivery is, travel clauses, all the things that we agreed upon are just reflected in that document. And again, it's there to protect me. It's there to protect the intended parents, but I'm not super strict when it comes to those, just making sure that, you know, what we talked about before is rightfully reflected in that document. So we can proceed quickly.
Yes. At that, I feel like at that point of the journey, everyone's just like ready to get to transfer. And so it's the poor attorneys are like, get lots of check-ins from everybody. Sarah, what about you?
You know, our first surrogate who I'd mentioned that didn't work out, she was from another country. She was Brazilian. And so when we were doing we got through legal, we got through like almost up to transfer. And then before we signed, you know, it fell through. So it was a lot leading up to that. And she wanted in the contract to be able to go back home to Brazil while pregnant. And because I'm like Emily, I'm like, all these things are there to protect both of us. And let me say just this as a whole, I think there's a misconception in surrogacy that like there are people who are trying to like take your baby or, I mean, thank you Netflix for that stupid, can I curse on this? I won't. The stupid, you know what show. It's like, oh, I'm going to steal your baby and date your husband. It's like, no, it's not like that. Like none of us, oh, thanks. Like Blair said, I can curse. A stupid ass show. So, like, you know, this is not what's happening. All of us are here. Like if there is a woman agreeing to carry your baby and you are trusting a woman to carry your baby, like you're all there for each other. Right. So like no one's trying to like screw each other, but it's so important to have a legal document. So, you know, we got great lawyers. But the one thing that we did have to talk about with our first surrogate, I was like, you can't take my one kid to Brazil. Like it's not a safe place. You know what I mean? Like and so we went back and forth on that, but I also felt terrible asking someone that, you know, they can't go see their family, but to agree to a 9-month journey with us or a 10-month journey as it is, like, yeah, like that wasn't okay. But other than that, we didn't have any legal, was super easy with Wit. You know, but yeah, that was a big thing that I kind of, a sticking point for me was, please don't take my kid to a country that's not super safe.
But like, what if something happened too? Like if she was over there and something happened, Your legal agreement is written specifically based on, you know, where they are. So if they're in a different country, even like in the United States, if they're in a different state, laws are changed completely.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like they don't understand that. And that's why those travel clauses are in there, and getting the right medical care too. So.
And I actually find that travel is one of the things that's talked the most about in the legal part of the process, like just with not when they can't leave their state, when they can't leave like a certain proximity. And yeah.
So. Take road trips, Whitney.
Alex, what about you? Is there anything that was a must have for you
So we didn't really have like a lot of like must haves in there, but I'll say like having that, like that conversation with like the mental health professionals, to me, that is key. Like there's so much that gets discussed that you don't even think about when you're going through the process. Like, I mean, it's a 40 to 70 page document. Like every little detail gets outlined. There are things that I could never even thought about coming up that we had to have these conversations for ahead of time. So having that like mental health professional, I think, is so, so key. And something that like my agency, it's at like the very beginning, that's like still sticks with me today. It's like, you know, the contracts are solid and they're there for a reason, but this entire process is based on trust. And you're in each other's lives for 18 months to 2 years. And so you're building that foundation from the beginning. And so you want to make sure that whoever you're diving into this process with, like you're all in together and you trust them explicitly no matter what.
Absolutely. And you actually gave the perfect segue into something else I wanted to talk about, was like the timeline. It's really difficult because many people, once they get to surrogacy, it's after years and years of trying. So sometimes when we share different timelines, it's really hard to hear. So I think it would be helpful just to help anyone listening sort of manage expectations, if you guys would be open to sharing how long your journeys were from pivoting to surrogacy to having your child. Alex, if you want to start.
So when we met with our agency initially, they were like, oh, it's going to take about, you know, 6 to 9 months to find a match. This was February of 2020. Obviously, COVID hit and our timeline got expedited because of it. I guess a bunch of other people on the wait list just kind of like froze or dropped off, or and we ended up matching at the end of April.
Wow.
So we were very, like, it was very, very quick for us. But then because it was still, you know, it's obviously COVID, some of our other timelines got delayed. Rather than being, you know, 6 to 8 weeks for legal and medical clearance and everything else, some of those were very drawn out, especially when it came to like the medical clearance and the transfer, because the clinics were only seeing so many people per day.
Mm.
So that timeline was a little bit longer, but our actual journey itself really, really shortened up. But I know like so much of it really nowadays depends on the agency's wait list. I mean, some people are matching in 2 months and some people are 18 months. So just, it's so dependent these days.
Sarah, what about you?
Oh my God, ask Emily first, because I'm literally looking at my phone right now, because time is a flat line for me at that moment. I'm trying
totally.
So ask Emily, I will come back to you.
Emily, it'll be interesting to hear what you have to say, because I feel like your wait is probably, I mean, I could be wrong, like so much faster than what an intended parent waits.
Yeah, I as a surrogate, I don't feel like I have a wait time when it comes to matching. Now, there's always that hurry up and wait throughout the whole process, right? So even getting started and completing those initial screenings of background check and psychological evaluations and insurance verifications, that longest period of waiting to gather all of your medical records and, you know, retrieve all of those and get them together, like those wait times, the legal wait times, there's a reason that saying is so popular in this industry. It's hurry up and wait, because I feel like that's all we do. So speaking personally as a surrogate, I really don't feel like wait times are a thing for me. But again, I'm really flexible on who I can work with. Now I'm in a place where I meet all of the criteria except for one for most clinics. So I'm limited when it comes to who I can work with based on that matching criteria and what types of clinics would move forward with me. Professionally speaking, though, I give, like Alex said, I give that 6 to 9 month wait time as far as finding a match, but it's very clinic, surrogate, parent specific. You know, we talked about every one of these journeys being so different. It's because everybody wants something different when it comes to what this process looks like for them. So when a surrogate comes through my doors and they complete their application, you know, maybe they are somebody who has had 5 pregnancies before and we're looking, you know, 5 or 6, we're looking at a clinic that would have that flexibility to work with her, or she's got to be on the lower end of the pregnancy numbers. BMI, C-section, age, all of these things play a part in who the clinics will accept. But then on top of that, what are the parents looking for? She could meet everything that the clinic clinic is requiring. And the parents are like, well, we have these specific criteria and what we want, and they may not be a match. So I feel like it's not a first come, first serve type of thing. I feel like it's really who meets who to make the journey and expectations just beautiful for everybody involved, and trying our best to keep it as seamless as we possibly can.
Sarah, did you find it? It's okay if you didn't.
I always screw up the years because like this was all happening while I was finishing breast cancer treatment and also trying to figure out, I had to get my ovaries out because I have a genetic mutation. So, and I think the whole world went deaf to me until I realized that like my kid was coming. I was just like a shark. I kept swimming, right? So I do screw up the dates, but yes, I did get them right in the hopes that this podcast will help someone. And I want to be radically honest with this. So we started looking for agencies in 21, like the end of 2021. We picked our agency. I think we signed with them in January of 22. And then, or no, sorry. We signed with them in 21. And then we matched with our first surrogate in February of 22 and worked with her. And then we lost her August of 22. And then we're matched with Whitney very soon after because, and this is an incredible story. We matched with Whitney because we got ghosted by our first surrogate. She disappeared and like later on told me why she did, but she disappeared. It didn't tell the agency, didn't tell us, just like dropped off. After she had come to New York, we had done all the testing. We were, you know, through legal. We just hadn't signed yet. And so we got ghosted. And then Whitney was matched with a couple in London and they ghosted her because they realized they weren't ready for it yet, but they didn't tell her right away. So our agency's like, you both got ghosted. You're perfect for each other. Let's see if you'll match. And that was in the end of 22. We matched in October. We went to Richmond and it was amazing. It was like the best first date ever. We had Mexican food and margaritas. And then we did our transfer Easter of 23. So our journey was a little longer, but when I said about the radical honesty, and I think this is important, is they had quoted us 12 to 16 month wait when we signed. And there are some agencies that you can skip the line if you pay them more money. I fundamentally have issues with that. However, that is what we did because at that moment I had one embryo. I had to know if this was going to work because I wasn't ready to start the adoption process because that was going to be our next. We weren't going to go the route of egg donor. And I just say this because we were able to do that. And I'm so grateful because every month that went by that I didn't know if my kid was coming was harder and harder and harder to handle from an emotional perspective. And I wasn't ready to, you know, start adoption yet because I just had to put everything into him. So that's saying that our wait time was shorter because we skipped the line. And it's a thing that exists, not in every agency, but it was an option for ours.
Yeah. And I love that you shared the ghosting part. And I think it's a major disservice if we only paint the rainbows and butterfly parts of our journeys. Because then I think if we're only sharing that, whether it's on social media or whether it's through conversations, people feel so incredibly shocked or blindsided when something that is unexpected comes up.
Yeah. I always want to be super transparent, as an advocate in this space, because it is the most incredibly beautiful thing you can witness if you're part of it, and also the hardest. And also it's, as our agency said, he was like, surrogacy is kind of like the wild, wild west sometimes. There's no guarantees, you know? So I think that's an important thing to know is you can set yourself up with all of the things you think are going to happen, but just prepare yourself that some of them won't happen that way.
And sometimes I even find when I'm preparing intended parents, I'm like, I can't even like forecast that. Sometimes it's just something very weird and random. Yeah. Like I recently had a surrogate, and it's okay because she would laugh about this, test positive for toxoplasmosis, which is when you're near cat litter and she doesn't have a cat. And so like all we could do was just like laugh. Like sometimes just weird and random things happen. Going along the theme of that, Alex and Emily, do you have anything you want to share that was sort of something that was maybe unexpected that happened to you during your journeys? And if you didn't, that's actually okay too.
I mean, it's, I guess like our unexpected was like the very first and the very ending. So, you know, we did the transfer. I was like very ready for like our 2 week wait. I was like, oh my God, this is going to be the longest 2 weeks of my entire life.
Yeah.
And we're about a week in and our sir called and she was like, I have to go get a COVID test. And most of my house has been out with COVID now. And they want me to take a pregnancy test. Do you want me to tell you whether or not you're pregnant? And I was like, yes, please. Like, we're like day 7 or 8 into this. And so she goes, congratulations. I'm pregnant. You're pregnant. We're all pregnant. I was like, oh, okay. I guess we're having a baby now. But then it was like right like Christmas and New Year. So then our two week wait ended up being like really like 3 weeks. So we were just like holding on to this hope of like, you know, the peeing on the stick essentially and like the urine sample at the doctor's office without like confirming from the blood work. And then at the very end of it, we had like a very beautiful, like for the delivery, everything was like very calm. Our surrogate was induced. We'd gone to the hospital like the night before. We had like these like conjoining rooms. Everything was lovely and everything was like very like calm. And my husband had left to go get some food for the rest of us, for me and him and our surrogate's husband to eat lunch. And the doctors came back in and they were like, where's your husband? I was like, oh, he just left to go pick up food. They're like, you need to get him here. He needs to come back. He needs to be right now. All of a sudden, our surrogate had to go back in for like, she had to go in for emergency C-section. My daughter's arm decided to be right above her head. And they were like, if we don't do a C-section the next 10 minutes, like your daughter's going to break her arm and all these other issues are going to occur basically. So I called my husband, I was like, turn around now, get back here. And so it was kind of ironic. It was like the very first and the very last thing because everything else throughout was like very smooth.
Did he get back?
He got back. And then there's this huge debate of like, who's going to, because we talked about it so much of like who was going to be in the delivery room. And it was kind of written into the, obviously it was written into the contracts about like who could be in the room during a C-section, everything like that. But then the doctors were like, well, you can all be in there if you want to be.
Oh, lucky.
And
you.
Well, it was the end of being a C-section. So we were like, oh, okay. Well, then we all want to be in there now. And so it was really nice. We were all in there, like me, my husband, the surrogate's husband, were all like behind the curtain. And then we all like, witnessed like the delivery of the baby all together. So it was actually really sweet. So that's like amazing picture of the four of us with the baby right at birth.
Amazing. Emily, what about you? Anything unexpected?
So I guess now comes the time where I start talking about numbers because otherwise this won't make sense. So I have 3 of my own children. My kids are 11, 12, and 14. I'm currently pregnant with surrogate baby number 9.
No.
So.
Wow.
I have. Sarah, hold on.
Wait, you've had 12. This is your 12th child?
Yeah. So I have been. This is my 7th surrogacy.
Wow.
I have had, so I've carried 2 sets of twins and I've helped 4 families. So I've done sibling journeys. You know, I was blessed enough. The very first journey that I did, I helped that couple in Ohio. She actually had to have an emergency hysterectomy with her 2nd child. So they wanted to have 3 children. We did a fresh transfer for that one. And I got pregnant with a singleton on the first attempt and I carried their 3rd child for them. So I was able to complete their family. They were done. That was it. The next family I carried for did not have any children at all. And so we did a double embryo transfer and I had boy-girl twins for them.
Wow.
The next family that I carried for actually were friends of that 2nd family. And that's how they found me. So they have... they also did not have any children. I had their first little girl for them. And then they had 1 embryo left and they wanted to give it a shot. Boom, surprise, embryo splits. I had identical twin boys for them.
Wow. Well,
I had all 3 of their kids. And then the next family was from North Carolina. And I did a sibling journey. So I had both of their daughters. So when I go back to...
I feel like we need a diagram.
Right.
Do we have a crown for you? We have a crown?
Jessica? I know.
So I feel like surprise number 1 is, you know, those that rare 1-2% chance of embryo splitting, it happens.
Wow.
So when I talk about like me carrying multiples, the first was intended. And so they were able to have both stick and they had fraternal twins, but the 2nd one was a complete surprise. And I remember calling the mom afterwards and the husband was in the shower and she's like, I think she's just like, what? And we're FaceTiming. And she's like, she didn't turn the camera around. But anyway, he was in the shower and she tells him, and I just remember him like yelling through the bathroom. He goes, I only ordered 1. It's so funny. But I don't think it sunk in until like, I don't know how many months down the road where they were like, oh my, there's two in there. We're having two. The monitoring for both types of twin pregnancies also was very different. I had to see an MFM maybe twice for the first one. The second one, because of the type of twins, I was seeing almost weekly. So that was a fun surprise. And then the next one, like I have always been very routine in my pregnancies, deliveries. They're really unclimactic. That's a word, right? There's not really eventful. I'm pregnant. Baby comes. Like I don't get any symptoms really. Like it's just, you know, I like to give lots of updates and pictures and videos and all the things for the parents, but nothing too exciting happens. So we always plan for an induction based on, you know, once I hit that 39-week mark and the parents type, you know, kind of looking at what works best for them to travel, to get there, to make all their accommodations, especially the ones who already had kids, to, you know, get childcare in place for them. So on the very last one, the most recent one, my water broke. And that's always been like bucket list for me. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I was full term already, but I was sitting in the couch We came home from a baseball tournament and I stood up and I go, oh my God. And so it was just completely out of left field, but they were in North Carolina. So I called them and I said, hey, want to let you know my water broke. I called the doctor right away and I got my stuff, went to the hospital. It's still shocker, didn't put me into labor, but I still had to be induced and all the things, but it gave them plenty of time to get there. They quickly got there. And then I didn't have her for like 6, 7, 8 hours later. Like it was a while, but it's just funny just to kind of, everyone is different. But I will say, like, Alex, I was diagnosed with COVID in the very beginning of that pregnancy. The only time to my knowledge that I had ever had COVID, and I was sick. I was very, very sick in the beginning. I got my antibiotic. They did what they did to treat me. The rest of the pregnancy was awesome until delivery. My water broke. And then looking at the placenta, it was covered in nodules. It was just, it did not look anything like my normal placentas had been post-delivery. And they did testing on it and it was just riddled with COVID. So it was just very surprising, very different. And yeah, just... I guess one of the things that stands out in all of my journeys about how different it was.
And how are you feeling right now?
I feel amazing.
Oh my gosh.
26 weeks on Sunday. So everything's perfect.
What a blessing. I think to close it up, I'd love for everybody to maybe give one piece of advice or something they wish they had known before they got started on their surrogacy journey. Alex, do you want to start us off?
Oh man.
I know. Not to put you on the spot.
I feel like there's so much, but so much, not that much at the same time. It's like, expect the unexpected and do your research ahead of time. Talk to people, join the Facebook groups, ask around, and just know that like every journey's going to be completely different. Everyone's got the same angle in mind, but it is a winding road throughout it. There's going to be high highs and low lows, but hopefully it ends with, you know, a positive story at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Sarah, what about you?
You know, I think this is really important. Depending on what state you're in, some states have surrogacy has been legal for a long time and some it's newer. Mm-hmm. And in New York, it was a newer thing when we began our journey. So our fertility clinic is incredible. I love them. They're the best embryologists in the world and they knew nothing about third party reproduction, which is surrogacy and gestational carrying. So I had to hold the hand through the finance department, through the, you name it, the surrogacy coordinator. Like I knew more than she did because we were all new to this, right? So I think being your biggest advocate and like reading up and like talking to other people and like Alex just said, like join a group, whatever, because know that you probably know more than most people about this process before you even head into it, right? If you're going into it. So that's number one. And then number two, when you get to the hospital for the birth, our hospital had only seen surrogacy journeys that were like, this beautiful woman has your child and they take the baby and they leave. Like that was their experience with surrogacy. So they, from the jump, they were not excited about us coming in, working with our legal team. They had all these crazy requests. they like didn't understand that this was this beautiful relationship. So we had to teach them. And through the birth of my son at our hospital, they were like, this is the first surrogacy journey we've seen that like we understand now. And I'm like, great. So you treat every intended parent and every surrogate that comes through these doors in the way that we had to fight to be treated with you. Because it is a beautiful, beautiful thing most of the time. So my advice is to keep teaching, keep advocating, and like advocate through your relationship and show everyone you touch in this journey that it can be the most beautiful thing in the world. And again, that it is not some sort of weird transactional thing, although unfortunately it happens. So yeah, advocate and educate.
Love that. And Emily?
Yeah, what they both said. But one thing to that is talking to the right people and making sure that you understand that there should be third party, you know, advocates in place, especially when it comes to legal, when it comes to escrow, when it comes to all the things that you need to have in place in order for this journey to be effective. We all need this village, you know, it takes a village and we all need this village. We're all here for the same end goal, is to get a baby in mom's arms, dad's arms, whatever that parent dynamic looks like. So yes, I think transparency, communication, and just making sure that expectations and boundaries are set and that there are the right people in place to support you. No matter what, every person that I speak to, it might not be the best fit for them, but I want to make sure that they walk away with the education and resources that they need to make whatever that next step looks like. That's the best decision for them. So while it's working with my agency or anybody else's agency, at least they have the tools that they need to be able to go out there and get to that end goal.
Absolutely. And let's just also end with sharing where everybody can follow along and also your resources. So Emily, your agency, and Sarah and Alex, like your grants and your resources, because I think that would be really great for everybody and if they can follow along too. Alex, so can you start with your socials and all where we can find you and your grants and all the things?
So you can find me on my personal social media and Instagram at It's Alexandra French. But then you can follow my nonprofit at The Surrogacy Foundation. The Surrogacy Foundation gives education support, but mostly we also give grants that cover the cost of surrogacy for people who need it for any medical purpose. So we currently have two grants open for $250,000 right now. And those are open through the end of the year. So if anyone needs to go through surrogacy, please like help spread the word about that, have them apply. So these are two incredible grants open right now.
Amazing. Thank you. Sarah?
Yes. Alex, you rock. Thank you for starting that foundation. To that note, I also have a surrogacy foundation called A Chance for Life. On Instagram, it's at A Chance for Life. And we pay for the entire surrogacy journey as well. So we give $150,000 grants to one family. We don't have one open at the moment. We are our first grant recipients. It took them, speaking of time, it took them 2 years. But the transfer is happening on my birthday on November 19th.
Wow.
We're finally doing it for surrogates and 2 years. But so stay tuned. We're going to chronicle the whole thing there. But I also have a platform of my own. It's Sarah Strimmel Bentley, S-A-R-R-A-H-S-T-R-I-M-E-L. Bentley like the car, on Instagram. And I have, I've chronicled the breast cancer diaries, the surrogacy diaries in my highlights. And yeah, my account's about breast cancer, fertility, and being a mom of a miracle guy named Chance. And it's a super fun journey.
Thank you so much. And Emily?
I applaud you both for doing that. And I'm going to send a mass email out now to everybody. Tell them about who you are and what you do and let them know about the grants and the foundation. That's amazing. So all of my socials are just my personal ones are under my name, Emily Westerfield. And then my agency is called Carrying Dreams. So I'm based in Ohio, but we work with intended parents all over the world, and our surrogates and egg donors, we have an egg donation branch as well, are based all here in the United States. So yeah, we just provide resources and education and advocate. And of course we facilitate, it's full service. So we facilitate the whole process from start to finish and, you know, hope that everybody gets the baby that they're dreaming of.
Amazing. And I just wanted to share, you can follow me at Surrogacy Simplified on Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook. And I also have a free community for intended parents. You don't have to work with me. It is open to be a part of it is open to absolutely everybody. And we have a free monthly support group. So make sure you're following along so you can get all those resources as well. And I'm also just reading some of our comments. We're going to put all of these links into the chat so you guys can have some of these resources available to you after this recording. But thank you so much, everybody, for your time and for listening.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you to all of our guests on the panel today. And thank you so much for supporting the work of Art Books. Going into 2026, we have some really exciting things planned. So watch this space, keep listening to the podcast and sharing it with your friends. And also follow me on Infertile AF Stories on Instagram and check out my website, which is infertileafgroup.com, which is where you can find all the work of Art Books and more coming soon. Thanks so much. Happy New Year. Love you all.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at weightwatchers.com.